You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of the newest Bamford translation of the book by Rudolf Steiner entitled How to Know Higher Worlds, A Modern Path of Initiation. This is section 12, not a chapter, let's say, but an epilogue written by Dr. Steiner in 1918. The path to supersensible cognition, indicated in this book, leads to a soul experience. It is particularly important that anyone aspiring to this level of experience harbor no illusions or misunderstanding regarding this experience. Certainly, it is easy to deceive ourselves about these things. One of the gravest deceptions occurs when the entire realm of soul experiences spoken of in spiritual science is misclassified so that it appears placed in the same category with superstition, visionary dreams, mediumism, and other aberrations of the natural human striving for the spirit. This error occurs most often when students following the path presented here are confused with others who, in their attempt to find a way into supersensible reality, deviate from authentic cognitive striving, and so decline into the aberrations mentioned above. If we follow the path presented here, our soul experiences take place within the realm of pure soul spiritual experience. In order to have such experiences, we must first make ourselves as inwardly free and independent of physical life as we are in ordinary consciousness when we form thoughts about the perceptual world or our inner wishes, feelings, and intentions, thoughts that are independent of and unattributable to the actual experience of perceiving or feeling or willing. Some people, of course, deny the existence of such thoughts. They claim that we cannot think anything that is not drawn from perception or from inner life, as this is conditioned by the body. Therefore, they say all thoughts are simply shadow images of perceptions or inner experiences. Those who assert this, however, only do so because they themselves have never been able to develop in their souls the faculty of experiencing the pure, self-sufficient life of thought. Once we have experienced this, and it is a living experience for us, we know that whenever thinking presides in our soul life, we are engaged to the extent that such thinking permeates our other soul functions in an inner activity in whose creation the body plays no part. In our ordinary soul lives, thinking is almost always mixed with other activities, such as perceiving, feeling, willing, and so on. These other activities originate in the body, but thinking plays into them. And to the extent that it plays into them, something occurs in and through us in which the body has no part. Those who deny this cannot rise above the illusion caused by the fact that thinking is always observed together with these other activities. With inner effort, however, we can experience in our souls the thinking part of our inner life in itself, apart from all the other activities of our inner life. That is, we can isolate something consisting only of pure thoughts from everything else in our soul life. These thoughts are self-sustaining and free of any admixture of other activities. They have been cleansed of everything resulting from the perception of the outer world, bodily functions, or the inner life they govern. By their very nature, in and of themselves, such thoughts show themselves to be spiritual, supersensible entities. If our soul unites with these thoughts and excludes all perception, remembering, and other inner activities, it lives with this thinking in the supersensible realm. That is, it experiences itself outside the body. Once this is understood, it can no longer be doubted that the soul can have supersensible experiences outside the body, for this would mean denying what we know from first-hand experience. Why, we may wonder, are people reluctant to accept this confirmed fact? The reason is that it does not reveal itself unless we have first put ourselves in the soul state capable of receiving it. People, however, are generally suspicious if they are required to make an effort of a purely soul nature for something to be revealed to them that in itself is independent of them. They believe that because they have to prepare themselves for its revelation, they have actually produced its content by themselves. In other words, for the most part, people prefer to have passive experiences that require no effort on their part. If, in addition, they are also unfamiliar with the most basic requirements for a scientific understanding of a set of facts, they will easily take the contents or products of a soul in a state of lowered consciousness, that is, a state below the degree of conscious activity displayed in sensory perception and voluntary action, as an objective revelation of a non-material world. In other words, they will mistake visionary experiences, mediumistic revelations, and similar soul contents for true spiritual perception. What is experienced in such states of lowered consciousness, however, is not a supersensible, but a subsensible world. Not all conscious waking life runs its course wholly within the body. In particular, what is most conscious in waking life takes place on the boundary between the body and the outer physical world. Hence, what happens in our sense organs during perception is as much the projection into the body of an event occurring outside as it is a permeation of this outer event by and from the body. Likewise, our will life is based upon the fact that human nature is embedded in the cosmic whole, so that what happens in us through our will is also simultaneously a part of the whole cosmic process. These soul experiences that occur at the boundary of the body certainly depend, to a great extent, on our human bodily organization. At the same time, however, the activity of thinking plays a part in these experiences. And the more it does so, the more our sensory perception and willing become independent of the body. Visionary experiences and mediumistic demonstrations, on the other hand, depend completely on the body. In such practices, everything is eliminated from soul life that could make perception and willing independent of the body. As a result, the contents and products of the soul become nothing more than manifestations of the physical life of the body. Visionary experiences and mediumistic phenomena, in fact, result from the fact that in them a person is more dependent on the body than in ordinary perception and willing. True supersensible experience, on the other hand, such as described in this book, requires that we direct our development in the opposite direction, from that of visionary and mediumistic experience. In other words, we strive to make the soul progressively less dependent on the body, more independent of it, than it is in ordinary perceiving and willing. Thereby we achieve the degree of independence from the body that is characteristic of pure thinking, thus extending the range of our soul activities. To develop supersensible soul activities, as intended here, it is most important that we penetrate the experience of pure thinking clearly and consciously. Indeed, this experience of pure thinking is already and fundamentally a supersensible activity of the soul, although it is one in which we do not yet perceive anything supersensible. In pure thinking, we are already living in the supersensible realm. But at this point, it is still only pure thinking, and not yet anything else that we experience in a supersensible way. Further supersensible experiences must then be a continuation of the soul experience we have achieved in union with pure thinking. Therefore, it is crucial that we experience this union correctly, for right understanding of this union sheds the light of insight on the nature of supersensible knowledge. On the other hand, as soon as our soul life sinks below the clarity of the consciousness experienced in thinking, we stray from the right path to true cognition of supersensible worlds. Instead, our soul is taken over by our bodily functions, and what it conveys to us will be a revelation, not of the supersensible, but merely of events occurring in our body in the realm below the sense perceptible. As soon as our soul experiences enter the realm of the supersensible, they are no longer as easy to describe in ordinary language as experiences in the material world. Therefore, when reading or hearing descriptions of the supersensible world, we must be mindful that the language employed is in a way further removed from the actual facts than is the case when we talk about physical experiences. We have to understand that many expressions and terms employed in these descriptions are, as it were, only images delicately hinting at what they refer to. It was stated in the first chapter that, quote, originally all rules and teachings of spiritual science were presented in a symbolic sign language, close quote. And the third chapter, likewise, spoke of a certain, quote, system of writing or occult script, close quote. From this it may appear that such a language or script may be learned in the same way as we learn the letters and combinations of an ordinary language in the physical world. Certainly it is true that there have always been and still are schools and associations of spiritual science possessing the symbolic signs by which supersensible facts may be expressed. A person initiated into the significance of these signs, therefore, possesses a means of directing his or her soul experiences to the supersensible realities in question. What is much more important, however, is that in the course of such experiences, as a soul can attain through realizing the contents of this book, for instance, the soul should find this script revealed through its own contemplative experiences of the supersensible. The supersensible realm speaks to the soul, which must then translate what it has heard into symbolic signs in order to survey it in full consciousness. What is communicated in this script can be realized by every soul. In the course of this realization, a process the soul controls, as we have indicated, the results described in this book become evident. Readers should approach this book as though they were having a conversation with the author. Therefore, the advice about receiving personal instruction on the path to higher knowledge should be understood to refer to this book. In the past, there were good reasons for restricting personal instruction to oral teaching. Now, however, we have reached a stage of human development when spiritual, scientific teaching and knowledge must be spread abroad. much more widely than ever before. Its teachings must become much more accessible than they were in the past. For this reason, the book must take the place of oral instruction. The belief that we need personal instruction, in addition to what is said in this book, is true only to a limited extent. Some of us may indeed need some additional personal help, and such further instruction may be helpful and meaningful to the individuals concerned. But it would be wrong to think that anything of importance has been left out of this book. Everything may be found in this book, if only we read it properly and, above all, completely. Some of the descriptions in this book may seem to call for a complete transformation of our whole being. However, read rightly, these descriptions do no more than indicate the state of soul necessary for these moments in our lives when we encounter the supersensible world. For such moments, we develop this state as a kind of second being within us, while our other healthy self continues on its normal course. We learn to keep the two beings apart and to regulate their interaction properly. All this we do in full consciousness. Thus we do not become useless and incompetent in practical life. We do not lose our interest and skillfulness for life because we are, quote, practicing spiritual research all day, close quote. Nevertheless, the experiences we have in the supersensible world will radiate throughout our whole being. Rather than alienating us from life, they will make us more productive and effective. The descriptions in this book had to be presented as they were, because each process of cognition directed toward the supersensible world takes our whole being. Every moment that we are given over to cognition of supersensible realities engages us totally. Perceiving a color, for example, requires only the participation of our eyes and the related nerves, but our whole being participates in the perception of supersensible things. Our whole being becomes, in a sense, quote, all ears or all eyes, close quote. This is the reason why information on how to develop supersensible cognition often seems to imply a complete transformation of our being, as though our ordinary being were wrong and must become different. I would like to add a few points to what was said in Chapter 6 concerning the effects of initiation. With slight modifications, this holds good also for other sections. Some readers may wonder why supersensible experiences are described in pictures and images rather than abstractly as ideas. The reason is that to experience supersensible reality, it is important that we know ourselves as supersensible beings in a supersensible world. We become aware of the reality of our own supersensible nature in the descriptions of the, in quotes, lotus flowers and the, in quotes, ether body. To enter the supersensible realm without such an awareness of our own supersensible nature would be like being aware of the events and processes of the physical world that surrounds us, but not of our own bodies. Just as we become conscious of ourselves in the physical world through the perception of our physical body, our own supersensible form, which we can perceive in our ether body and our soul body, makes us conscious of ourselves in the supersensible realm. The end of the epilogue and the end of the book, the Bamford translation of the book by Rudolf Steiner, How to Know Higher Worlds, A Modern Path of Initiation.